first spies are trapped on a moving truck and need to use their wits to escape. But one will be thrown to the curb. No, it's not the latest reboot of 24. We're here to talk about episode 7 of Bravo's new reality show, Spy Games. Hello, my name's Jeff Quest. I run the site SpyRight.com, where I write about espionage fiction, and I've been having a great time talking about Spy Games. While the show is airing, we're recapping and looking at the show through the lens of some of the most famous real and fictional spy books and movies. I am pleased to welcome the long-suffering chief of control to my Maxwell Smart, my co-host, Matthew Bradford.
Hey, Jeff. It's good to be here again. I'm Matthew Bradford, as you say. I run the 00 Section blog. It's devoted to spies in all fictional forms, from comics to books to movies to television. And it's always a pleasure to venture into a new realm with you and reality, in discussing reality television for spies.
Yes, well, and thank you for joining me. So before we get too far into this episode, I want to ask you, we've got four spies left. What famous spy would you link to each person? I'm just going to throw, we're going to mix it up today. You know, a good spy can think on his feet.
Okay.
What would you say? Who would you go with?
This is tough.
All right. Well, I'll play my cards first. How about that?
Yeah,
I'll
give you a chance to think. You're just bringing this on me. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll play my cards first. So if we're going to go with Brock, I would see him as a kind of Jack Bauer-esque character. You know, he's got a little bit of that special ops background. You know, he can focus in, laser focus, very cool, calm, collected kind of a character. That's kind of how I could see that going on there. Jack Bauer for 24. If we're looking at Christina, I'm going to go kind of atomic blonde, Charlize Theron. She's got the wild hair, you know, street smart, rough and tumble kind of spy. Chelsea, now I've started reading this new book called The Unexpected Spy, which is written by this woman who was I think her name is Tracy Walder, and she was a sorority member. You know, so she's, you know, like kind of the blonde sorority sister who ended up working for the CIA and being over in Iraq and doing a lot of CIA work over there. So that's kind of who I'd see Chelsea kind of lining up with, maybe. Finally, we got George. I'm going to go with George, especially after last episode where his alter ego, Johnny, you know, you got to go with Johnny English, right? For him, kind of the bumbling spy who somehow manages to kind of pull off whatever he's trying to do, even though it's completely the wrong choice of everything that he's decided.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. Although I think he's more of the one who poses as the bumbler, like the Peter Wimsey of we're detective fiction. I'm not quite sure who that is in spies. But, you know, I'm going to go for George with a different direction, not okay. The bumbler. I'm going to go with Bill Hader for George because they were all talking about this other side to him this week, and we really got to see that, you know, and I think it's been there the whole time. I think he has been pretty duplicitous and hiding a whole different George this whole time. A pretty impressive George, you know, when Christina talked about his public speaking background and how he told her that he always tells the judges that he didn't think he did well. You know, she's really, I mean, he does, but it honestly had not occurred to me that he was playing them and doing that. You know, I thought he, you know, I got the kind of, I fell for the earnest bumbler George. So yeah, I think I'm going to tip my hat to him as a real Bill Hayden who can sort of burrow in and show one face to the world while secretly being something else.
Okay, Bill Hayden from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, the Jean Le Carré book. Okay, I can see that. I can see that. Although I will say I have I envision when Christina was talking about him going to those classes, I envision those classes that were very on trend maybe 10 years ago by the guy that told people how to pick up women. right? You know, like that yeah. kind of training was the training that he got, right?
Could be. You might be right.
Okay, I'm sorry. So that's George. Who else? What do we think for everybody else?
Okay, Chelsea. I'm tempted to go two different directions. One is the modesty blaze, because she's really used her seduction on George, and apparently pretty effectively. You know, I didn't think George's falling for it as much, but this episode it seems like she really got to him. But I'm not gonna, that seems too obvious. I actually like the other side of Chelsea better, which I'm gonna give her Jack Ryan, because she's the analyst.
Yeah,
she's got all the books, you know. Yet she's capable when she's stuck into the field, you know, not always super capable. Sometimes she's, you know, ass hanging out a window, but when she really gets down to it, like she can do the field stuff. She can, you know, run around the submarine, but at heart, I think she's a book spy. You know, she's an analyst and used to going through the, she's got all her books there. They keep calling her the Girl Scout, and, you know, Jack Ryan's always called a Boy Scout. So, yeah, I'm going to call Chelsea Jack Ryan.
I like that.
All right. Christina, I'm going to give Tara Chase from the Queen and Country series, because Christina has kind of that, she's managed to operate in the background this whole time. And I think Tara has that. Now, Tara does a little more, you know, field work than Chelsea has really done. Than Christina has really done so far, but she's also good at that sort of manipulation and kind of letting other people do her dirty work sometimes. Let's see, Brock. I mean, you had a good one for Brock with Jack Bauer. I certainly see that.
Well, now you had said previously you kind of visioned him as Flint, right?
I did say that that was specifically in the Icy Challenge, I believe, where he sort of had. Because he proved to be kind of a jack of all trades, like Flint. So yeah, you're right. I forgot I'd said that, but I'll stick with that. He's continued to be fairly Derek Flint-like, although he doesn't need to rely on a gadget cigarette lighter. Like Flint, he's got these sort of reserves of unexpected skills.
All right, cool. Well, that's kind of like the roundup of where we end up today. What do you think of this episode?
I really liked it. After last week seeing the preview of it, I didn't have very high expectations for it. And I still don't think that the challenge itself was amazing, but it just, this was the juiciest drama, I think, yet. And obviously it had been building, a couple of these things had been building all season and we're starting to get payoffs, so that's nice. But it also, I wish they could have, you know, had this level of internecine plotting like paying off earlier as well. And it's just cool to see all these season long threads of shattered alliances kind of coming into play. What do you think?
Yeah. After last week, which I thought was probably the high point for the season so far, this was definitely a letdown for me. I was not, I wasn't as big a fan probably as you were. The challenge was okay. I thought it was all right. If you've been to an escape room at all in your life, you're kind of probably a little underwhelmed by what they came up with for this challenge. Mm-hmm. But, and maybe it's just because against all odds, you know, a little bit of, you know, like Phil Collins playing in the background here, we've somehow had George win me over the course of the season somehow.
Yeah.
And so maybe part of it was just being kind of disappointed that he's gone. I don't know, you know, and having everybody kind of gang up against him at the end there. But I did like the way that we finally do see some real networks used, you know, and it definitely felt like, okay, finally, we're going to see them work together to get somebody out in a realistic way, in a way that actually had some effect versus the way they say that they've been saying that all season and haven't really been able to do anything because the game isn't set up to allow them to do that. This is the first time it felt like they could kind of twist that knife and it might have tweaked things one way or the other.
Yeah, like you, this episode brought me around on George, and that's kind of part of why I like it. You know, I think they succeeded in some good reality TV stuff, even if the challenge, like you say, it was just an escape room, and that wasn't very impressive. But the interpersonal drama for me worked, and being turned around on George, that's pretty impressive. And I have to say that well, I was going to be sorry to see anybody go at this point. You know, like I like the four that we're down to. I've, you know, and even George, who, you know, we kind of love to hate most of the season. I love to hate him enough that I wanted him to stick around. And on top of that, they pulled that reversal on him of like, A, showing that unexpected Bill Hayden layer to him of, you know, he's been laying these traps that we weren't aware of. And B, giving him a really dignified exit where you can't, I mean, I guess, you know, we're already talking about who's gone, so I'm jumping way ahead. But when he gives Chelsea his coat, you know, it was just this kind of like, and he doesn't drop it on the floor when he's trying to do it. He doesn't like, he doesn't slip on a random banana peel and crash all around the room. You know, like he does something very chivalrous and suave, even though they've just been at each other's throats in the interrogation room, and he gives her his coat. And that was just a very redemptive gesture, I thought, on his way out.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way. Although watching it with my wife, she's like, he just thinks he still has a chance with her. So I had to get, I was like, okay, well, probably.
Maybe he does. Maybe they're together somewhere now.
No, he's out on a date with that blind date girl. Yeah. So, okay. So that's, we've jumped ahead. We've jumped back. We've jumped all over the place. Let's kind of go to the beginning and talk a little bit about how the episode starts. We go back to Chelsea is still got a huge hate on for George because he had let loose his secret to somebody other than just her, right? The big reveal at the end of last episode was that George had told his secret that he had been kicked off of a dating site because I can't even understand why, but it was some sort of reason that Colin knew that even Chelsea didn't know, right? And she was really mad about it.
I was hoping the recap would like make it a little clearer exactly what he had done, but it didn't. We did. I think we got the longest recap yet this season. Like there was a lot to recap, I guess, partly to make these ongoing, you know, alliance twists pay off. But yeah, we saw the whole end of last week's episode again where, Chelsea had good reason to be kind of angry because she was really, it looked like she was going to go home when she, when Colin revealed that he knew the one piece of information that she'd just really been touting herself as having. It is pretty amazing how resilient Chelsea has proven. You know, no one else was on the bottom three times, let alone four times. I think last time looked like the, or I guess two times, let alone three times, I should say. But last time looked like the end for her when Colin pulled out that George knowledge. And for that reason, I think she's so mad at George, like, because she really almost went home for it.
Yeah, no, and she plays that whole scene pretty well, right? I mean, she doesn't come at him guns blazing. She plays it a little slyer, and that she's like, she kind of has this whole disappointed thing in a way to really get George's sympathy on her side, which I thought was very smart on her end.
Yeah, that was kind of what I wanted to see earlier on with you know, the whole dossier drama, and I'm glad to see somebody kind of play something smart, but even so, she then makes the mistake of blurting it all out to Christina when George is listening right around the corner. I mean, I don't know if that really happened or if that's some reality TV editing, but the way this show is cut, as much as Doug talks about awareness, environmental awareness,
situational awareness
again and again, none of them demonstrate it in the house ever. There's always people right around the corner when they're spilling secrets. And to Chelsea's credit, at least she goes down an octave and she's whispering it to Christina. But still, I don't know if George has the benefit of the subtitles that we get, but he's like seemingly right there in the door, you know. At least shut the door before you like talk about these secrets. Maybe do the spy tricks of turning on a radio or you know,
going to the bathroom. White noise. They'd like to go in the bathroom and have those secret talks. So
turn on the water. What's the thing, supposedly, you don't actually put on the radio or the TV because the local authorities can find that broadcast and edit it out. But if you turn on water, it's always got a different sound mm-hmm. pattern. So it's the better blocker. And Chelsea has the book. She should know that.
So we get, then also end up with, after George hears this, he goes to Brock and tries to form some sort of an alliance with him, right, to combat this girls' alliance that is forming with Chelsea and Christina. And we also get, at that point, probably the most heavily Frankenbited sequence I think I've seen on the show yet, right, where they kind of form up that you can tell that they're editing together this little bit where he's talking about Chelsea and Christina teaming up against him, right?
Oh yeah. That said, though, even though that seemed very Frankenbited, there his reaction to Chelsea's betrayal felt pretty genuine to me. I hadn't realized she'd gotten to him that much, because in the hot tub he seemed pretty aloof. Like, he seemed to me last week like he knew what they were doing. You know, and as you said, maybe that was more the presence of Christina. But here, you know, when he's talking to Brock is when it really comes out that Chelsea really has gotten under his skin. And he, you know, he talks about, like, her nose, something about that, like, just like little things like, you know, like that strike you about the girl that you like, you know. And he's, I think he's really hurt that she's been betraying him, when I had thought he was aware of it. But I don't think so. After seeing that scene with Brock, that part felt genuine to me, that emotion, even if the dialogue about their network didn't.
Well, and maybe it's because, as we learn, he is on the rebound. His big secret was that he'd been previously married,
which is honestly a better secret than the drive-by thing.
Yeah, the secrets overall were pretty shaky throughout the series, and that one was pretty interesting, which makes me wonder, is that something that we'll see in the next episode, right? Will there be a whole nother list of secrets that they need to figure out in this final mission, and will play some sort of factor? Because it did seem kind of out of nowhere that they would drag this out of him for it to mean nothing. I don't know.
Yeah. What I also like about this scene with Brock, though, is the fact that we know already that Brock's got an alliance with the girls, and George doesn't know that. So there's some nice, like, multi-layered spies spying on spies spying on spies stuff going on here. You know, they've got there's a secret alliance between Brock and Chelsea and Christina already. George doesn't know that. He thought he had a secret alliance with them that Brock didn't know about. And now he's trying to break that secret alliance by going to Brock, who he thinks is a free agent, but is actually, you know, still in a secret alliance with them.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. Well, and then the other fact is, you don't know, is Brock really in a secret alliance with them, right? So there's always the possibility that maybe he is buying into what George is selling. I can see why that might be a good move for him. You know, he talks about how it would be bad to go up against George in the finale, but I don't know how bad that would really be for him, honestly.
Well, I wouldn't have thought it would be that bad until this week, where, you know, like, we really do see that other side of George. Even if the public speaking knowledge comes from some, you know, Georgian, slippery, sleazy speaker like you're talking about, he's still been playing the judges, which is pretty impressive, because they're hard people to play.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so I can see why Brock sees that he might actually be a real challenge at this point. But yeah, you're right. We don't know until the end which side Brock's going to come out on, but that's another level layer to that scene that I like. You know, yeah. We do know that Brock has another alliance. We don't know if he'll keep it.
They go to the pool house. And it looks like they're just, this is another weird thing, like, it looks like they were just coming from working out or something. They're all really sweaty and flushed with no explanation, and you're just kind of like, what was going on there? What were they doing? But they come in there, they check their mailboxes, dead drops, and they find a code breaker kit in their mailbox, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I have to say, it looked like, you know, when you were in third grade and the teacher would send you that packet of homework home to work on the worksheets. That's the vibe I was getting there.
Yeah. It didn't look that impressive. And Doug even says, we didn't really give them much training on this. We just gave them packets,
It was really, it was the pretty funny, like, just kind of like throwing up your hands, like, yeah, we didn't really put a lot of thought into this one, so sorry.
Right. I mean, again, I was hoping Errol would come out and train them.
That's a real disappointment.
Yeah, we've only got 1 week left, and I don't think they're going to have a mentor training in the finale, so that is disappointing. But I wish somebody had given them, you know, a little bit of training on codes, like, because that would have been kind of cool to see too, especially when later they're talking about some very basic, you know, substitution codes or book code. Or no, they don't even use a book code. But, you know, that would have been cool. That would have been cooler than the move a thing out of the way and the words under it code.
Well, and the other, I felt like there was a missed opportunity too. If you're going to do this code workbook or whatever, code worksheets, it would have been neat if there was another layer to that where it's not referenced in there, but like you see they have some other stuff on the top or whatever. There's another code that if they figure it out, it gives them an advantage for the challenge or something like that, some other layer that we know about that they don't, and we can kind of see that play out a little bit. I would have really appreciated.
That would have been a lot better than the situational awareness thing that they do have, which we'll get to later. But, you know, that felt kind of cheap, whereas if there had been something in that book that was a code and somebody had caught on, but then again maybe there was and nobody caught on and then they were kind of stuck and couldn't use it, but yeah. It would have been very cool if the person who got through all the codes in the book had an advantage going into the final challenge. That would have been great. This packet of codes, even though Chelsea's very excited because she gets excited about homework, this is, you know, the one who got the sixth grade medal from the police chief or whatever, not only does it look like a slap together homework packet, but honestly, you know, that Usborne book of spying had cooler codes in it, like for kids, I think they could have done better in a lot of ways. And imagine, you know, if there had been someone training them on codes, it just would have been a more visual thing than looking at a stack of paper. Like there were a lot of wasted opportunities in the code training, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they needed to come up with a way, and obviously they were working on it for the actual challenge, but if they could have come up with a better way to make the training part more visual somehow, it would have just been much more interesting.
Absolutely.
So we also get this interesting moment with George, you know, kind of he's out on his own, he's trying to lock in on what he needs to do, but he's also talking about how it doesn't seem fun anymore, you know, like the whole experience seems to have kind of just drained him a little bit. He talks about and we get this other great moment where he talks about stealing his dad's Corvette. So, you know, I got to ask, is George Ferris Bueller or is he Cameron?
I think he wants to be Captain Kirk. That was what I was taking from the J.J. Abrams reboot of Star Trek, where that's literally what I thought. I thought this didn't really happen. He's talking about the first scene of the Abrams Star Trek movie. Like, you know, he stole his dad's Corvette. The cops come after him and he drove it off a cliff. That's the only part he left out. Like, and then tells them his name is George Tiberius Kirk, you know,
Johnny George or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't really believe that story. Did you?
No, I not really. Although I can see George being in like a Ferris Bueller reboot, right? As Cameron, you know, I kind of got that vibe from him too.
Yeah. Where like you could do a, sort of young Spy Games spinoff where young Colin comes over and convinces George to take his dad's Corvette.
Exactly. That would be great.
And then catatonic George watches Chelsea change by the pool.
I see it happening.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, this gets at a something that plays out later in the episode where George really does seem not having fun anymore, right? He just, it's like the fun has been drained out. And I think, I don't know how long they were filming at this point, but it does feel like they'd probably been locked in that house for ever. And, you know, it does strike me as... he's kind of saying what the audience has maybe been thinking throughout is that these challenges are not that exciting. It's not that, you know, it's not that thrilling. I'm kind of bored.
And when Doug takes him to task of like, because George says, well, I wish it had just been more exciting. And Doug gets his intense eyes and he's like, more exciting than espionage. And George is like, no, I wasn't going to say that. You know? Yeah, more exciting, because this wasn't espionage. This was like big escape room codes, you know, like it was, I think, yeah, like you said, I think his complaints sort of voiced some audience ones. Complaints that it wasn't, obviously, I don't think he was comparing himself to what Doug had done undercover. I think he was comparing himself to the games that they'd been through on the show. Also, though, I took that disappointment to be really a manifest of his betrayal by Chelsea. That seemed to really hurt him. Like, I think he really did think that there was something between them. And I didn't get that until this episode. But from his Brock confession, I thought that he was really taken in by her and felt very betrayed.
Well, and I think also, even if the betrayal wasn't that strong, I think just the fact that he'd been playing against everybody and there was nobody that he really seemed to really connect to, even Chelsea, I think he still felt like kind of at arm's length a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't sure how that was all playing out. I think just he's been talking throughout how he's the lone wolf, right? He's playing it on his own. He's playing against the whole place. And it was true. I mean, nobody was really looking to team up with him or be on his side. And so I think at a certain point that would feel pretty draining.
And the fact that he is coming off of a divorce, I guess. Do they actually say how the marriage ended? I think it was a divorce, but...
They don't get into it. It's left as vague as his Tinder exile.
Yeah. But still, I mean, that also explains it, I think. If he was coming off of a breakup, went on a show to kind of escape from that, and
everybody hates him. Right. I would think that would be a pretty morale downer at that point.
Yeah. Also, did this race car driver thing come out of nowhere this week? Because they always identify him as luxury car marketer or something like that. Is that what it is? Luxury car or something? But it doesn't say driver, you know. and so it's another thing. Like, why are these things hidden? Like, we know about that when he was a kid, he was in a drive-by shooting that doesn't seem to have made any impression on him. but we don't know that he was a race car driver, or did we know that?
No, I mean, this is the first time that we're hearing about it in the show. Now, if you go online and read his bio, he talks about starting an Israeli security company, which was interesting reveal, as well as being, a race car driver. But no, this is on the show for sure the first time we're hearing about it.
It sounds like it bears a little more exploration. And I wish that they had a defensive driving course. You know, Doug gets so mad. Did you think you were going to be racing DB7s at 200 miles per hour? Which is a 20-year-old reference, for one thing. And not like the classic Bond, you know, a DB5, that then we'd understand why you'd be referencing a 50-year-old car. But referencing a car from, like, the late 90s that was never in a Bond movie is just sort of strange. I wouldn't blame George if he didn't think there was going to be some driving in it, you know. I would have liked to see a driving class or a driving challenge with some defensive driving training for them beforehand. They do teach that on the farm in the CIA, so I think it counts.
One of the things I want to get to at the end of maybe this episode or the next one is, you know, if there were a second season, what would we see as some changes to make and some challenges that they really kind of missed the boat on? And I think that one is for sure one that I'd want to see in there next season.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're, you know, they're all training for the codes, and it really does seem like Chelsea is in her element. She's got that cramming for finals vibe going on right now. The lawyer.
Yeah, and and she does have a book. Like,
she's
we
got
talked,
a book.
You know,
she's got a book.
Except they, you know, blur out the cover, or they reframe the shot so that we don't see what book it is. I would have liked that little, you know, I guess they couldn't clear it, but... Yeah, I want to know the whole time. I wanted to know what books she had in her stack of spy reference material, and we might get a glimpse into her spybrary, and it doesn't it's not revealed to
all
us.
Right.
So
well, I'm gonna after we're done here, I'm tweeting her, and I'll see if we can get a list of spy books that she was reading.
Good idea.
But so you know, you said you kind of liked the challenge, right?
No, I said I didn't particularly like the challenge. I liked the episode because
okay, right, the drama. So what did you think of the challenge then? What, you know, not a fan.
Basically, what you said, it was escape room. You know, like
and not a good escape room is the problem. Is the other problem?
Right. Yeah, I think part of that's because they were trying to think of ways to turn codes more visual, and in the case of the second one, that really didn't work. What did work to me was the final thing, where after they've solved all the puzzles, which only one team managed to do, then they stick these like puzzle pieces that they've been getting as prizes from each one into a master like thing. I don't know what it was, but they create a map of the area, and that was cool. Like, it's too bad both teams didn't get to it, but even the one that did, they don't really dwell on it, when that's much cooler visually than moving around the giant blocks. So, I'm just going to jump into the second one because it was the lamest. Like, there is literally a challenge where one of their codes is that there are blocks covering some of the letters of the word. Now, what they do is they make it giant so that, you know, it's like a huge... huge words written on the floor that they can stand on, and the blocks are the size of IKEA sofas, but they're not hard to move. And when both teams get them is when they just move them out of the way completely. Like, it's supposed to be something where, like, you move them into patterns. And that was just so lame. It was a word search covered by giant blocks. That, I don't think that even qualifies as a code.
Yeah. No, I think it was interesting. It was the least challenging code. It was just lame, but it was also probably the most visually interesting one of the ones that they did. I mean, it had big things, and they were, you know, it just had a more of a cool look. I think they needed to figure out how to do something with that in a different way.
Yeah, and actually, it did really flummox people too, because both teams got hung up on thinking that the get was the first word. Just because they didn't move that large block, but once they did, they realized quickly that it was something else. And in terms of making codes visual, I don't think it's as hard as they make it seem. I mean, we look at one of the longest running competition shows on television. Is Wheel of Fortune, which does that every week. You know, there are visual codes that people crack. Like, that's so, yeah, maybe the challenge was how to do it and not seem like Wheel of Fortune, but
and
that was about the level of these codes too.
Yeah, well, it was not brain meltingly difficult, although they did kind of fake them out, I will say, when we get to the truck, right? I mean, yeah. they completely changed things up on them. And the one thing I did respect, you know, when you talk about the two teams, I mean, let's be quite honest right here. I mean, Brock and Christina just crushed it, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think they did an amazing job of laying the groundwork for communication well, you know, and having really good communication as they're going along. You saw they're reading the clues fully and really getting a sense of what that means, right? You know, Brock's looking at the locks and saying, hey, this is a word lock. That means we need to come up with a word. Or these are numbers. We need numbers. Or this is a key. We're going to need a key if we're going to solve this puzzle. I mean, and that is very smart.
Right. And I think the reason that they're so good at it is because they were so bad last time they were paired.
Sure.
And, yeah, that's great. I mean, that was Brock's least distinguishing moment, when he put them on the wrong path when they were tailing a suspect last time they were teamed. And Christina really let him have it in the interrogation. and, you know, Foley threw him under the bus for making that call and not listening to her, because she didn't want to go that direction. You know, she thought they should stay on the street with the suspect. He wanted to go through the park. But because of that, they both realized the value of good communication this time. And it was actually the reverse. In the most crucial instance, it was Christina who was hung up on, you know, this week's equivalent of the path through the park, where she was so set on get being the first word, which Brock was never really sold on. And he used that timeout that they'd established eventually, after they wasted a lot of time on get, to say, you know, listen to me. I think we need to think about it differently. And she let him do that. You know, they'd agreed. So she played along with it, and it worked really well for them. It was great teamwork.
Yeah, no, that was great. And when they do finally get out, I have to say, so much of this felt kind of silly of some of the things they were doing. I did love that they had the bolt cutters. They were getting these pipes that they kind of screwed into the bolt cutters to make them work.
Yeah.
I thought that was really actually pretty cool. I loved that little bit of it.
Yeah, that the two puzzle elements were cool. That and the map puzzle that comes together later.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to touch on the main hang up for our other team, which of George and Chelsea, you know, they were in that box truck for a long time, just flailing, right? And so did you feel that puzzle, was it fair play to kind of wrong foot them there with the ciphers on the wall that are, you know, ciphers to nowhere?
Yes and no. Like, I like that it builds on their training throughout the season, you know, where really Doug has been hitting them over the head with this idea of situational awareness, and they should have cottoned to that by this point, that yeah, they should look around. But at the same time, the show hasn't done enough of that, of like bait and switches, that I can't really blame them for not, you know, like, yes, they've been trained that, but they've also seen what the series of challenges are. And the series of challenges just haven't been impressive enough to make you think outside the box, you know? So as a viewer, I was a little let down by that. And I can only imagine as competitors that they were really frustrated by that.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, what I would have loved to have seen is if they had, like you say, kind of threaded that idea throughout the whole show. If they had things in the house that they need to be keeping an eye out for that are going to give them some sort of an advantage, you know, things like that. Like, there's codes in the pictures that they've hung on the walls or stuff like that, where they need to really be active and looking at things around them. I think that would have played to this and made it feel less like a cheat than it did. That being said, you know, if any of these folks have ever played an escape room, what is the first thing you do is check and look around everywhere. Right. And so it just felt like, come on, guys.
Although I think part of that was Chelsea's undoing was her book smartness, you know, like she did all the homework and she was, you know, so into the packet, and therefore she's laser focused on that code and wasn't thinking. So, all right. Yes, she should have been more situationally aware. But also, you know, when you're a team, George wasn't bringing anything to the table of that. He had purposely not done the homework. He was bored by it. So what can he bring? He can bring gazing around like a doofus. He's good at that, you know. What happens to his doofus gazing skills? They're gone. You know, like, where's the George who spotted the camera in that apartment, like he tries to, you know, remind the judges of later? You know, he should have looked up.
Yeah. Well, and even with that, I mean, I felt like even when they were working on the wall, it wasn't like they were looking at the boxes and using the letters. And it didn't seem like they were really looking at the whole area to try and figure out things. And I think one of the smartest things that they did was on the other side with Brock and Christina is like, we need a key. Where are we going to find a key in here? I think that should have been the clue, but they weren't able to, you know, stick their head above the trees to see the forest.
yeah, Brock and Christina were clearly the winning team, and there was no question of that. They were much better as a team. And I think probably George and Chelsea's teamwork was hampered, too, by the fact that she'd been playing this seduction game with him, and he felt betrayed at this point. Mm-hmm. It would have been cool television if they had had it out in the van about that, you know, but he doesn't let on that he knows that she's trying to, that she's against him now and has been using him. So that's too bad that that didn't come out. But also, though, when you talk about an escape room, the first thing you do is look around for keys. There, in every escape room I've done, they've been better hidden than that key. You know, that's other.
Yeah, that was a pretty obvious get if you're going to do that, right? Although yeah. apparently not obvious enough. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of mind-boggling. So, because yeah. even Brock and Christina are pretty close to the end there when they finally find it.
Are they? I was not too aware of the ticking clock this week. I don't know if they had it up, but it didn't feel to me like they were near the end. I thought they got it pretty quickly. And then when the door opens on Chelsea and George, I was kind of surprised because even though it felt like it had been forever, I didn't feel like we didn't have those numbers ticking down.
From what I saw, from what I remember, is that when Brock and Christina get out, it says like 2:40 or something along those lines. And then okay. they're like supposedly, and this is where I feel like we had a little bit of TV magic. They show them getting into the car and it's like 2:59 and it's just clicking over to 3 hours when they hop in the car for exfil. So, you know, now could they have been playing with that to make it seem more dramatic and Brock and Christina flew through it and ended up way before 3 hours? Certainly could have been.
Yeah.
Because we also have some additional weird kind of time cuts, because every other episode we've seen, they go right from the mission into the assessment, right? You know,
yeah. at least
that's the sense that you get. And here we get this weird time jump where they have people going to sleep, George is going to bed, yep. and they're yeah. up late talking, and then all of a sudden they're at the assessment the next night. And it just was like, ooh, they're letting some of these TV seams show here. And it was just a little awkward in my mind.
Yeah, it was weird.
A little TV, little of the TV magic is being tipped off. In the assessment, the, you know, Brock, Christina, and Chelsea alliance lights George on fire. And then George decides to go and pour some gasoline on himself, right? Basically, is that how we could phrase that whole assessment?
Yeah. Now, wait, has George not been on the bottom before? No, he was on the bottom before, right?
I think was his first time in the bottom.
Hmm. Yeah. Still, though, I would think that just from hearing other people talk about it, that he would know better than to light himself on fire in such a way. Like, surely the legend of Doug and Nika's eye rolling has spread to other people by now. Like, you know, you don't want to set Doug off by making it seem like car racing is more dangerous than espionage. You know, like, you don't want to set Doug off in general. So I don't. Yeah, George should have been smarter about that, I think.
Yeah, it was just odd. I mean, they obviously, you know, everybody lays into him and basically pipes in there to say that they think he should go. And he really did just kind of fold like a cheap suit, right? He basically gave up. It just seemed like he didn't want to be there anymore for whatever reason. And it just, he was giving really some pretty lackluster answers. Even his big, you know, I've got the fire in my belly again. It seemed, you know, it was maybe not a fire. It was more of like a little match.
Yeah. Although also, why does Who Wants to Be Here matter so much? You know, like clearly Chelsea really, really wants it. But at the same time, like it's a competition show, not a Who Wants It show, you know, like. But each week, the people on the bottom talk about that. And the same thing happened to Colin last week. It was partly because he didn't want it, you know, that they let him go.
Well, and I think that plays into some of my concerns about next week, right? Where there hasn't been a very good laying out of what the criteria is for a winner. And, you know, who really deserves to win in whatever situation they're setting up, which makes me feel like the ending is going to feel kind of arbitrary, right? Is it just going to be there, flip a coin and say, hey, this person's the best, and we're just kind of stuck with that? That's the way it feels like it might play out, and that will be pretty disappointing.
I am worried about that.
I think if we don't see somebody who clearly just crushes this final mission, we could be in a case where it's going to be, you know, sliced pretty thin about who should win and who shouldn't. And part of it is, part of the problem is, you don't want it to be a blowout, right? I mean, you want to have some drama so that you're kind of worried about who's going to win and who's not. But I think the problem being that they don't have a strong criteria of why you should win, and that makes it harder to make that case.
We'll see. You know, it's unclear. It's very unclear. So next week, it could be a totally different thing. You know, it might be that next week feels like the end to a completely different show.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it could be like that final mission is basically like, if you complete the final mission first, you win, which I could be okay with as long as that's laid out in advance. I think if it's one of these things where you do the final mission and then, you know, somebody finishes first, but then somebody else does something better as they're finishing and they finish second, and then the assessors come in and have to try and parse out who they want to win, that will be really a frustrating kind of thing to watch.
Yeah, it would be nice if there's a finish line that, you know, someone clearly crosses and it doesn't come down to the judge's call.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about George, I felt, was that, you know, it did seem like he just wasn't having fun, and everybody was against him. And some people thrive on that, right? Some people can say, hey, I've got the whole world against me, I'm going to show them. And others just can't handle that. It's like, you know what? If everybody's again, I'm out. I don't want to be around this. And I think that's finally kind of what we saw, especially when we see this network finally come into action and they're all really ganging up on him. I think we saw him just like, I'm out.
But that was a pretty good dramatic scene, though. That's part of why I like the episode, you know. Yeah. So we've had these two alliances, and we don't know which one Brock's going to pick. Like, Brock had an alliance originally with Chelsea and Christina against George. Then George tried to make one with him. And it really comes down to, you know, well, first, Christina makes an unusual move where the judges didn't ask all of them. You know, the judges have determined that Brock and Christina are winners and they're dismissed. You know, they're going to be on their way and they're going to go talk to Chelsea and George. And Christina really makes a bold move for her alliance by standing up and saying George should go home. Like, that's a risk, because you know, for all we know, the judges could have been furious with her for, you know, going against the grain. And
well, but she's done that before. She did that in a previous episode. She kind of pipes up. Yeah, she piped up out of nowhere and was just like,
oh, when she hated Nika.
Yeah, she's like, Nika needs to go. And I was like, oh, really? Because if I was the judge, I'd tell him, I don't care what you think. I get to decide. So
did she say that to the judges? Or did she say that?
Okay. She just said it kind of in general, but mainly to the judges is what I took it as. So the other part of it is, I wonder if that is, we're not seeing it, but they're asking them to give their opinions. Because that would make a little more sense, perhaps. I don't know.
But, you know, the way it plays out, it felt to me like a calculated maneuver and a risky one. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And Christina, you know, I think is certainly capable of turning on any alliance. So if she had wanted Chelsea to go home, she could have just bit her tongue there and let that happen. But I think she's realized the value of that alliance and feels that it would be beneficial to her in the final episode to have her closest person, Chelsea, still around. So she comes out and really, possibly uncalled for or possibly just edited that way, but she throws George under the bus. And then it gets everybody a chance to do that. And it comes, whether it was planned or not, it comes down to Brock. He's the final one who's got a say. And I liked the drama of that moment. You know, as I said, we've had setups going each way. And I was, you know, I can't actually give this show the credit to say I was on the edge of my seat, but I was the closest to not at the back of my seat that I've been throughout the show, you know, of who Brock is going to choose to denounce here.
Yeah, no, that was a good moment. I'll give him that. Yeah, we get to the interrogation portion. And one of the things that really frustrates me every time we end up with a guy and a girl in interrogation is every guy is like, well, she's just too emotional. I'm like, okay, guys, come on now. Can't you come up with something else to throw out there at these women?
Right.
Part of it, though, I think, is that they're parroting back what these interrogators are telling them, right? And I think a lot of the times that's their criticism for them. So it felt like we're kind of on repeat with that.
And an echo chamber.
Yeah, and it doesn't give you any real good reason for voting those folks out. It just seems kind of lame.
Right. Although it also, I mean, there's two other things at play there, too, though. One of which is this new knowledge that George has been playing the judges. So it does seem like, yes, he would give them what they want to hear. You know, like if he's aware of that, and I'm not sure if he is because he hasn't been in the interrogations before, but presumably news gets back to the others from the surviving ones from the black site of what horrible positions they make them dangle in for days on end. Oh, no, that's not this black site. But yeah, George has got to have heard what was going on in the black sites, and he does know how to play the judges. And so, yes, it's their fault for dwelling on that too much, but then it's kind of a cool move of George to turn it on them.
Yeah. Well, and I did like the moment when Errol is like, you know, George says, hey, I'm just sick of sitting around and I'm bored and just waiting for something to happen. And Errol's like, 99% of what we do is waiting. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's valid. I think it was a nice little spy moment. I just wish that they found a way. If that's truly something that they're trying to get across, then you need to show it in the show.
Right.
Versus, you know, we're just going to sit around and work on our worksheets.
Right. Like, give them this ongoing stakeout, you know, in the house every night. You got to be keeping your eye on the house across the street because there's some Russian spies living there and you're going to see them do something. And most of the time they just go through ordinary like household things. And then which one happens to be the vigilant one who sees when they open up the secret radio room, you know, like there should have been something like that, which really could have paid off that.
Oh yeah. Like a Rear Window kind of moment, right? That would be really great. Well, so I'm just going to put it out there. You know, I'm not going to gloat, but I think it was probably back in week 2 that I said that the producers would make sure to keep George around till just before the finale. And I called it there, and here we go. I got it right. You know, they got the drama. They got the drama they needed and then felt okay letting him go before the final episode.
Yeah, I actually thought he was going to make it to the end. So, yeah, you were right about that. And even this week, I thought he was going to make it. You know, I was surprised that Chelsea once again talked her way out of the black site, which is impressive, as Christina says when she gets back. Like, everybody says, you know, I think we've got to watch out for you. You've got the target on you. And they're joking and they're hugging and glad to see her, but Brock and Christina are serious too, you know, like she's now survived that bottom. Like there's something that she has a spell over the judges, clearly of some sort. I was actually kind of hoping that, as much as I liked the moment when George, I mean, I think the whole ending still plays out the fact that George is smitten with her and that she's been using him. And I think that plays out in the room when he accuses her of being emotional. I think that's also part of that, you know, it's kind of this, I know you are, but what am I, of like, he's feeling emotionally vulnerable because she used him in that way. So he can accuse her of being too emotional. And two, though, like, I think, like you said at the beginning, that he still thinks he's got a shot with her throughout. So when he gives her the coat, you know, like, it is a good moment for him to go out on. And, you know, I think it puts him in a good light. But like you say, you know, he may still be thinking he has a shot with her. So I was hoping that he was actually going to volunteer to go home. Like, that would have been really impressive if he had said, you know what, you're right, my heart's not in it and hers is. You should send me home. And when she walked in the door, I thought that's what must have happened. We're going to now get this, like, reveal that he fell on his sword. But unfortunately, no, it doesn't seem like that happened.
No, he jumped into his Corvette and drove off with the cops chasing him.
Yeah.
So, who would you pick for this episode zero? We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. There's not a whole lot of choices left now.
Yeah.
Who's least kind of in the best spot for the finale at this point?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, because I'm not sure those two things are the same. Because I would say the zero would have to be either George or Chelsea, since they're on the bottom. And, you know, I guess it's not Chelsea since she survives again. But I don't think she's in the worst position going in. I think Christina's in the worst position going into to next week.
Really?
Because Brock, to me, is the clear front runner. He's the one who's got all the skills. He's got the Flint skills. Chelsea, as the others, as dawns on the others, is unkillable. You know, she's proven herself to be the Jaws of this franchise. You know, like, she's gonna fall out of the plane and land on the big top and come back again. I think Christina, I think that's genuine. When Christina is hugging her and says, like, "You're now target number one," I think that's Christina, that's dawning on her right then, like, yeah. Oh shit, I shouldn't have thrown George under the bus, because I could have taken care of him. I don't know if I can handle Chelsea. Like, she's now come back from the gulag three times. I think Chelsea's in a better position than Christina going into the final one. Christina has never really gotten to demonstrate solo skills. You know, she was really good on a team with Brock this week, but if it's the three against each other, it's not going to be a team thing next week.
Mm-hmm.
And when has Christina really shown herself? I mean, yes, she got out of the ice room well, but yeah, I don't know. She hasn't managed to improve. When she tries to be manipulative by herself, like when she was behind Nika's sabotage, when she engineered the sabotage of Nika, and then she herself was also afraid of heights and didn't come out looking very good from that dangling episode. Yeah, I mean, I should give her the ice challenge, because she did do well then, but that was a long time ago. I'm not sure she's as well equipped.
I'd say, for me, I still think it's going into the finale, Chelsea is going to have one arm tied behind her back. She's going to have to, like, ace it all to have a chance at winning, I think, given the fact that she was on the bottom so many times. If it really does come down to the assessors getting to pick whoever wins, I think she's going to have to, like, ace everything, and everybody else is going to have to fail for her to win it. And I don't know that that's possible. I mean, that would be tough, even if she hadn't been on the bottom three times. I think it would be difficult to do. So I'm not super duper optimistic. I think she's going to have a heavy road to travel there. Now, if she does it, I think that's a great redemptive story, and she could really, if she has some success there, it would give her a really good case to make to the assessors.
Yeah. Now, early on, you picked Christina as going all the way. Is that still, do you still think she's going to be the one to come out next week?
I don't know. You know, just from watching some of the way this season has played out, I think Brock has got to be the front runner. Now, given that's the case, maybe that's why we should be skeptical about how it all is going to play out, right? Do they want to tip their hand so obviously?
Right.
So I could see them showing Brock as the strong contender, and then he's overturned by the upstart Christina.
Right.
I think I could see that playing out. She did do relatively well in the lock-picking challenge. It looks like that plays a factor in the next challenge. The cipher stuff she did okay with, it seemed like. So if that also looks to be part of this finale kind of challenge. So at least from what we're seeing, she didn't completely fail on the two things that we see as being part of it. So maybe that gives her at least a fighting chance.
Yeah. Still, I as much as it seems like it's a television setup, I'm still giving Brock the odds right now for winning next week.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got the advantage going in. He's just performed really strongly throughout. And so if it is going to be one of these kind of mashup challenges where they try and push everything that we've seen so far into one episode, I think he's going to have a distinct advantage to pull it off, no doubt. So, you know, if we're looking at next year, season two, I don't know if we'll see a season two or not. Now, here's the interesting thing. Kinetic Contact, which is the producer of this show, right, has a blockbuster right now on Netflix. Love is Blind is like the cultural thing for the moment right now. And it's the same. They do Love is Blind and Spy Games. So, maybe they'll have so much juice that they can get another season out of Spy Games. I don't know. But the last week's ratings for Spy Games ticked up a little bit, but it was a 0.11, but their lead-in was a 0.4. So that's never good in the TV realm to go down that badly. So I don't know. We'll see. We might need to just enjoy the finale we get here.
Yeah, I do think a second season is unlikely overall. But like you say, with kinetic content being hot, Bravo might want to just stay in business with them. And for that reason, give it a renewal. And, you know, I sent you that story earlier in the week, which I was just looking for and can't find now. I should have been better prepared and have. But one of their producers was promoted, it looked like, one of the producers on this show. So that also might bode well for a second season. And maybe it'll.
I think they could do a really strong second season. I think we've seen a lot of the stuff that didn't work, but a lot of it seemed relatively easy to correct and not a difficult way. And we also saw some stuff that really worked really well that they could lean into. I think the whole blind date thing was great. I mean, that was by far the strongest challenge that they came up with. I think if they can come up with some of those, I think the other thing is, one of the things I was thinking about is they really need to try and split them into teams at the beginning, especially when they have so many people.
Right.
I think that just, it makes a more interpersonal dynamic, right? Where they're actually trying to work with each other and fosters more of that kind of drama that they seem to really want to have. As well as letting us meet everybody. The first episode, we didn't even meet half of the people because they were so busy setting up some of the other stuff. So I think there's lots of ways that they could kind of tweak things to make it just a more fun experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they've learned all the lessons that we've seen there on it, too. You know, they've been we've been viewing it once a week, and they've been hammering these out, editing them for ages. I'm sure that they have realized what works and what doesn't. And I'm sure that, number one, they realize that they need the house and the challenges to be better integrated so that the relationships in the house really play into the challenges more. I hope they come up with some better challenges, but I think they will. You know, again, they're going to see what works and what doesn't. And if there were to be a season two, I would expect it to be greatly improved. But I'm certainly not holding out for a season two happening.
All right. Well, Kinetic Contact, tune in next week. At the end of the finale, we're going to give some of our picks for really great challenges that I know I would love to see. I have a couple in my back pocket that I want to see next season if they do it. If you come up with, Matthew, a couple, we'll give them some freebies. How about that?
Sounds good. When you say next week, though, you're awfully confident that it's going to happen. I mean, what do you think the odds are that the finale is going to be put off till November because of coronavirus?
Well, I was going to say this might be our only spy thing with James Bond being kicked so far out there. I think we're going to need to really relish this season finale of Spy Games because it might be the best spy thing we're going to get for a while now.
Right. So all Bond fans who were waiting to see No Time to Die, like, take your second place with the Spy Games finale and tune in and let's hope it lives up to No Time to Die trailers.
Exactly. And they had the My Spy trailers, I know, at least last week I saw. So, you know, watch some Spy Games and then go see the movie My Spy with what's his name? I can't
Dave
even remember.
Dave Bautista.
Yes, there you go. Get your spy on with those guys.
Yeah. So maybe people can who haven't seen Spy Games can pass the long extra months waiting for a Bond by binging the episodes on whatever platform they're available on. We should know that. Is it on Hulu? What is it? stream
you
on.
Can, yeah, well, it streams on, I think you can get it on Hulu. I know it's on Amazon. You can buy the whole season for under $10. So that's right. How I've been watching it. There's lots of ways to get access to it. I think the Bravo app, you can stream the latest episodes on there. So check it out. Next episode, we've got The Final Mission. That's the title of it. And we're going to see, it looks to be a mashup of previous trainings. And apparently they go through a final interrogation. And like I said, makes me a little worried about an arbitrary winner. But I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, me too.
Well, if you want to talk more about the show, feel free to tweet me at SpyRite or leave a comment on the show page, which you can find at SpyRite.com/podcast, and rate the podcast on your preferred podcast app. We'll be back next week to look at the season or series finale. I don't know. We'll see. It should drop Tuesday, hopefully. We'll try and get it out. But until then, that's all for now. Thanks.
Bye.